We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And welcome in. It's the bonus edition of the Duke Basketball Pod. You want to call it the holiday edition,
yeah,
Coach?
Yeah, that's the holiday edition.
David Schumann alongside Associate Coach John Shire. I want to catch up with you guys. Hope you guys are having a good break, some time with family and friends, chance to break in the new years as you're taking this one is. The team has a little bit of time off here, 9 days between games, obviously against Wofford and then coming up against Brown on the 28th. But we had some extra time, and I know you're always working with the kids about, you know, when they're away from the team and not doing structured activity, good time to get some extra shooting up, right?
Yeah, it is. What, for me or for them?
Well, both in this instance, because today we're going to take our three-point shot and multiply. You're going to get three of them, so nine different topics. But before we dive into that, I do want to touch on that real quick. There's so many things, I imagine, for coaches that you guys fret about it when the guys go off on their own. You obviously want them to get home, and it's a good mental break, I would think, to get to see their family, kind of get them recharged and everything like that. But when they're away from the structured team activities, what sort of things do you guys like them working on?
Well, you bring up a really good point, because a huge thing for us, we don't like our guys to play. Like, do not play when you're home. The last thing we want is a sprained ankle playing pickup with, you know, some buddies back home. But, you know, in this case with this year, we play on the 28th. And so coach always wants the guys at home during Christmas no matter what. They'll come back in the 26th. It's a very quick turnaround, and so our guys need to be running every day, stay in shape. That's the biggest thing. And if we come back and our guys took a few days off, we don't want to have those 2 days where we're getting our conditioning back. So that's the biggest thing, to keep our wind.
All right, so three different three-point shots to get up here. We're going to go big picture, talk about Duke, talk about the holidays a little bit. Your career, what was it, 40-some percent? So, I mean, were you a volume shooter, would you say?
I would, you would have to ask my teammates. I would like to think I was not, but you'd have to ask them.
All right, well, we haven't had a chance to take a step back because you guys have been so busy with the games the last 6-7 weeks or so. I want to talk about college hoops in general, and I've got three different topics I want to dive into. And first has been the topsy-turviness of things at the top of the AP poll, and that's where a lot of national attention gravitates. And you look at the turnover. I think we've seen five or six different number one teams, at least in the AP poll, already a record. Do you attribute that to anything specific? I know you're kind of locked into what Duke is doing. Do you notice that maybe there's a little more parity when you do have a, you know, 5-10 minutes to glance around things going on around the country?
I mean, you see, I like how you framed that 5 or 10 minutes, because you know I don't like to pay attention to what other teams are doing. But look, it's hard not to notice what's happening in college basketball this year. And, you know, look, I think you could look at it in a couple different ways. I think, one, were a play away from being undefeated and being the number one team for a few weeks, but also I think we grew a lot from that loss, and that gave us an opportunity to go win at Michigan State, go win at Virginia Tech. And I think you look around the country, I think it's just one of those years, and sometimes it can be contagious where, you know, one loss happens, and let's say Evansville won in Kentucky, you know, Stephen F. Austin with us, and all of a sudden every other team that's playing a top seed, they think it's their day to have their moment. And so I think there's definitely a little bit of contagious energy going around the country. And also I think teams are figuring out how good they are. There's not this dominant team that you've seen so far in college basketball, us included. Hopefully we can get to that point, but where you're just going to go out and blow somebody out of the water.
Yeah, it has been wild to watch the first several weeks to see all the different teams winning and how important home court has turned out to be. I think through the first couple weeks of the season, no one in the Big Ten has won on the road, no matter how hard or no matter how highly ranked you are. So it'll be interesting to see as the season moves along. The other bit of news a week or so ago, we got our first look at the net rankings, and I know we broke down that last year, the net versus the RPI. When I saw it, I started to think about, you know, you've got a committee. There are now 68 teams that have a chance to get into the NCAA tournament, a ton of at-large bids, and, you know, with so much statistical information already available just in terms of stats and comparative things, who turns it over, who's really good at rebounding. You look at the wins and losses. You have these expanded conference schedules that we're going to see in a second. You know, you do have a committee. You have national rankings that obviously the media and the coaches play a role in. From your perspective, do you need a metric like the net that kind of boils it all down? Or what is a good way or the best way maybe to compare two different teams that maybe play in two different leagues?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, I think you look at the record. I think strength of schedule is important. And I think that quality wins is important. You know, I think when you go throughout the course of a season, you to be in the tournament, obviously the high major teams have more of a chance to do this when you beat a quality opponent. But, you know, the other teams have the opportunity to win their league as well. But I think when you have the opportunity to be a quality team, I think that's important what you should do. And so I don't know if there's – you know, metric, I know the quadrant system is something they've tried to do. I don't know if that is completely accurate all the time, because sometimes you get a quadrant two win that's towards the high end, right? And you get quadrant one win that's the back end. It's like a ranking off. It's like a difference between one in terms of the ranking, but all of a sudden you get in a different category for it. I don't know what
the answer
is.
And then people are like, oh, you're 8-1 in quadrant one wins. You're like, well, which part of the quadrant are
exactly.
you in?
Yeah. Exactly. And so, you know, like a win versus number one team in the country compared to a win versus, you know, top 30 team in the country in a different setting could be equal wins, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, I'm with you. I think that's where I think the eye test is so important, because from my perspective, you can play your tail off. Anybody out there can play their tail off, you know, in a road game against the number one team of the country, and then another team might be able to beat, you know, number 25 in quadrant one, and it looks right. like this team has a significantly better performance than this team, when the eye test might tell you something totally different.
Exactly. And so I guess I don't have all the solutions,
sure.
you know, but I think it's worth discussing and figuring out what's best going forward.
Interesting. See, I do think – I appreciate the fact that they're trying something new, and then they're showing a different way that's a little more tangible than just the random RPI list. You can kind of see – how the math is coming together.
No
it's
question.
Never going to be a perfect system, but
right.
it at least is a step forward. And I do want to bring our third topic, big picture. I was actually talking to Jay Billis the other day about this, and he brought up an interesting point as he's kind of crisscrossed the country and talked about this. I think you'll appreciate this as a scoring guard as good as you were in the college game. He thinks that freedom of movement hasn't been what it's been the last few years in terms of the way the game's been officiated the first few weeks of the season, and I'm not going to get you to comment on officiating, but I do want your perspective on, I do think it puts the refs in a little bit of a box, because it's either, you know, one, why are you calling all these fouls, or two, you know, guys are getting bumped while they're cutting and things like that. Do you think there is a good or effective way to bring about, you know, better freedom of movement? And when people talk about freedom of movement, it's this abstract term. What you're really talking about is more scoring, right?
It is, and, you know, making it harder on the defense, of course. You know, I think this isn't you're going to say I'm doing coaches talk right now, but truly, I don't really pay attention to the refs in terms of the trends and how they're, you know, officiating this year compared to last year. you know, I'm always coming from the mindset of adjusting to how the game's being officiated. And we talk to our guys about it all the time. And so if they're calling it one game, I think it really depends game to game. And so let's say you're playing a game and the ref, as soon as you put your hand on somebody, that's really a foul. It's not called all the time, but if they're calling it that game, they keep driving. And then if on the flip side, if you're going to be called for that, then stop putting your hands on a guy. But I think more offense is better, like for the game when you look at the NBA and what it's done. I think same thing for college. But again, I probably gave you too much coaches talk on that one.
No, I think that's fascinating to me. Real quick before we leave the topic, and I know we need to move ahead for the sake of time, but for those sorts of adjustment you're talking about, I mean, you've got some tremendous leaders on the floor, Jack White, Javon Delorier, and of course, Justin Robinson and Trey Jones, the captains. How much of that conversation, especially for the younger guys, comes from them versus comes from you guys, the coaching staff? Because I'd imagine at the outset of the game, there's so much the guys are thinking about, you know, their scouting report, you know, individual things they know about the opposition and stuff like that. But to give a reminder 5 minutes in, hey, this is the way things are being called and you need to adjust.
You know, that more comes from coach during the game. And, you know, I think he has such a great feel being through the amount of games and battles he's been through. But that comes from coach. You know, we don't talk about it often, but sometimes it's obvious it stands out to you, and so adjust to it.
All right, let's talk through a couple of topics related around Duke. Get our second shot up. We haven't talked about this yet. 20-game conference schedule.
Right.
Started already with the win in Blacksburg over Virginia Tech. You like it? You indifferent? What do you think?
Let's get through the 20 games, and then let's talk about it afterwards. I'm not sure yet.
I mean, it does create a much longer season. I imagine it has to change the way you guys think about how you put scheduling together.
Yeah, it does. And you also get a chance usually in the past where you get a feel for who teams are. And so, you know, 10, 12 games into the year, you're playing your first ACC game. Now all of a sudden, you know, most teams played it first game of the year. We played Virginia Tech 6-7 games in the season. And so it makes it, I think, tougher. But if you can get a win like we did, it's better to be 1-0 than 0-0.
Do want to talk, because we're in the midst, as we said, of the break where the kids are at home for a handful of days. When you look at any college basketball season, pre-holidays and post-holidays, and maybe kind of going back to more so when you were a player than in terms of coaching, was there a different mentality when you came back from break of kind of knowing you're getting into the business end of things, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, I do. I also think it's a great chance to have a clean slate. And so, you know, there are times, I would say one or two times my 4 years where I didn't play as well as I wanted to or left on a bad note. Chance to wipe the slate clean. And really, it's a new season. And so I think you have all these different, you have the like you said, the preseason in terms of before the break. And then you have, obviously, ACC play. But I think definitely when you come back, it should be a new season, fresh start. And I think for our team, a young team, I think that's key, especially for this year.
All right, final topic related to the current team. You guys are giving up a little less than 66 points a game. I mean, the numbers on the defensive end have been really outstanding. Teams are only shooting 29% from three. And you guys said right from the start of everything that this is where the team was going to have to get things done, was on the defensive end of the floor. Coaches kind of talked a bit about how building that identity, but it's not quite there yet. Is there a point where it's there, or is that a postseason reflective type thing? Because I know, I guess that's always an evolving thing when you're developing an identity.
Yeah, I don't know if you're ever fully there, but I think it's a constant evolution of, you know, what your defense is. And, you know, we've shown some flashes. I think the thing that you've seen Shoe made, our energy and effort for the most part has been there, you know, throughout the course of games. Our habits are not fully there. And so, you know, when we go through stretches and we're playing a lot of games, sometimes you'll see, you know, we're not pulling over on the help side like we should, or we're not in the right position. And I think, you know, that's what we need to continue to drill throughout the season. It's been great in terms of, you know, taking away a three-point line. We've done a pretty good job. We need to defend our paint a little bit better, much better. But there are definitely some things to clean up, but we like where we're at right now.
And I do think it's interesting to watch, you know, different teams around the country, and it's their thing, right? Syracuse has their zone defense. Everyone has different systems they work. To me, what's becoming, I don't speak for you, this is my perspective, the hallmark of the Duke defense is the fact that it is so versatile. I mean, the small ball against Virginia Tech, you can go big if you need to with Hurt and Javon Delorier and, of course, Vernon Carey Jr. inside. To me, that's kind of what makes this defense special, is that kind of hard to put in a box.
Yeah, well, like you said, you know, we have rim protection, we have guys who can defend on the perimeter, we can pressure the ball. Not many teams in college basketball are trying to pressure the ball and get on passing lanes, and at times we've tried to play more of a conservative defense where we're just taking away penetration and protecting our paint. So I think that versatility will be key going forward, depending on, you know, matchups and who we play.
All right, we got one more shot to get up, and then I'm going to have you give out some holiday gifts, and then we're going to talk about an all-decade team, which should be an interesting discussion, a lot of different guys to sort through in that. But a final shot, since we are in the season, we'll talk about the holidays a little bit. And I read a story about when you were a kid and you and your sisters got into a gingerbread house-making competition that you didn't handle it so well in terms of how the judging went down. So it did spring for me between, you know, Mom, Dad, Brooke, and Jennifer, because I think – you get a lot of the attention. Everyone says you're the most competitive. Right. This is your opportunity to get it off your chest, to fight back. When you're playing those arbitrary games around the holidays with family, who is the most competitive person in the family?
Well, I think competitive translates to who throws the biggest temper tantrums when they lose. I would think my family would say I'm first in that, but I get it from my mom. And my mom did track and field in high school, was a very good athlete, and she was known before I was of, you know, throwing some fits when she had lost or, you know, didn't do as well as she wanted to. And so it's the same thing, whether it be growing up doing gingerbread house or we always, you know, we play catchphrases as a family, we play these different games. When she's on the losing team, she's not happy with herself. You also don't want to be on her team because she's not going to be happy with you as a teammate. So I would have to say I get that from her, and that's her competitive edge.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, my family's kind of the same. It's a good thing that you have to come back on the 26th, because by then I think with my family at least, probably need a little time away after we've gone at each other for a few days. Second topic on the holiday tip. I know you're headed back to Chicago for a couple of days. If you had your druthers, when you get a few days, particularly this time of year, because everyone's feeling the season and things like that, would you rather, you know, go to this epic ski resort and spend a few days on the slopes, or are you still trying to hit that beach like you would in the summer?
You know, it's funny because my wife would love to take a vacation. I haven't taken a vacation in the winter, and I can't remember the last time. And so this is really like a fantasy question. But I'm going to the islands if I can. I'm getting away for 2 days. Let's go to the islands.
He wants the warm weather. He's not trying to be up in the snow. You grew up in that. You don't need any more of it.
Yeah.
All right. Last one to hit on. Obviously, New Year's is going to be right around the corner after the team plays a couple of different games. They're actually going to play one on the 31st, the ACC home opener against Boston College. Do you have a New Year's tradition that pops to the top, or maybe a superstition? I know different people eat different things on New Year's Day for good luck in the coming year. Right. You're not a superstitious guy, I don't think.
I am. I am, actually. Yeah, you didn't know that?
Let's take it through. You got some ticks?
No, I just, you know, like if something's working that I do before a game or in the season, I'll continue to do that. And so if it's, you know, getting a pregame meal somewhere, you know, on the road, and I saw you one game, like, that's good vibes if I see you the next game, you know, again.
So that is why Will Avery's been winning these shooting games. It's been working. If you let
you know,
him
it's
win,
it's since it works. Will has come on, we should actually bring Will on again and ask him what's been happening. So I'm sorry he's
you're
not
just,
here.
You're really taking a knee to help the team.
that's exactly what's happening. Yeah, exactly.
Well, now the bar is high. So take us through New Year's. You got a thing?
Well, my wife and I, since we have kids, you know, our favorite tradition now is falling asleep before midnight and not making it to the New Year's celebration. So that's happened to us 2 years in a row. So we'll see what happens this third year. Should be exciting.
All right, speed drills, Tom. Let's move through this. I did want you to – because, you know, we see the guys, we see them play, we know everything about what they can do on the basketball front, but I think a lot of people would be interested in what they can do behind the scenes. I know they're obviously very talented, so I'm going to throw out some topics, and you tell me which guy on the team that this best fits. You were very good, I think you talked about in Maui, you won the competition in terms of the video games. Who on this team would you say gaming skills would rival what you could do?
Well, I think the best one on the team, I'm going to say Jay Gold. I think he's pretty good at video games. I would have to consult with some of the guys, but I'm going to go with Jay Gold.
Do you think you could take him?
We played one time. He got me, so those days are over with for me. So I try to come out of retirement every now and then versus them, but, yeah, I'm not sure.
All right, Jay Gold. Well, a couple weeks ago we had Dave Bradley on. We talked about the shoe game amongst the coaches, but we haven't talked about it amongst the players when they're just on the street or just hanging out with their friends. I know you don't get to see them all the time, but you have a chance to glance. You got someone's shoe game that you appreciate?
Yeah, I think Trey. You know, I'll give Trey the best shoe game. He's always – I'm not sure if I'm – he critiques my shoes all the time, so I might be blending the two in terms of what he knows and what he wears. But I've seen some heat on his feet. I'll go with Trey.
All right. Big part of getting ready for the game, of course, is your music, which you listen to, getting ready for that. You had a chance to scroll through the guy's phone, see who's got the best playlist?
I have not been able to scroll through their phones. They won't let me do that. And I don't want to do that. But I don't think any of them really, their playlist. I'm suspect. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, really?
Suspect. But you know what? Actually, I take that back. J-Rob. J-Rob listens. He's got different genres, different kind of music. You know, he's up to date on what's going on. I could see him having a career in music at some point.
Well, this last one I want to bring up because I remember talking with Jeff Capel before he took the job at Pittsburgh, and he was talking about when he was recruiting Wendell Carter Jr. that he was a thespian. He was able to get up on a stage and act, and
right.
I think these guys all have skills outside of the game of basketball. So put you on the spot. Best non-basketball talent on the team.
So I give you one. I probably could come up with a better one, without being put on the spot. But, Javon was a heck of a baseball player. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a really good baseball player. Trey was a really good football player. I don't know about any of our guys singing or acting or anything like that, but I would say, Jav, one day we went to the Durham Bulls and did some batting practice. He had a couple to the fence, and you could tell he played back in the day.
All right, so we got some football and some baseball guys on the squad. Speaking of the squad, we're coming up on a new decade when we get to January 1st. I thought it'd be time to take a look back and try to put together an all-decade team. And you and I were talking about this the last couple of days. There's roughly 75 guys that are qualified. I don't know how the scholarship rules exactly work. Of course, the first one that would pop up is that 2009-2010 year when of course, your team won a national championship. For the sake of objectivity, we were removing you from consideration for the all-decade team. You cool with that?
I'm great with that. I'm great with that.
But I do think
let's talk about the rest of the guys.
Yeah, exactly. I do think it's worth running through, what's gone on over the course of the last decade. You had two national championships, 2010, 2015, ACC championships, 2010, 2011, 2017, and of course, most recently in 2019. National Players of the Year, Zion Williamson and Marvin Bagley III, the last couple of years, 2019 and 2018. A ton of different ACC Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year awards as well, and we can dive into that, but kind of free form. Let's just throw some stuff out there. First of all, from your perspective, it's probably one of the more difficult things to try to stitch together here because you have, guys who came and played, three, four, even 5 years, if you're looking at like a guy like Emil Jefferson,
right,
versus these tremendous talents, the one-and-done guys that have come through. Zion Williamson, of course, pops on that list. Kyrie Irving and the talent, what he's gone on to do in the NBA. So when you look back and you the last podcast we're talking with Will Avery about this, you're talking about that kind of window from 99 into the early 2000s and the tremendous talent that was here on campus. This decade's pretty sporty.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's looking back on the teams and the players we've had in this decade, it's the different kinds of players and the different paths they all took. I'm looking at these names and, Nolan Smith, obviously, it's strange calling him by his full name, but Nolan, a great four-year player.
And he counts as a one-and-done for the decade. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or two
exactly.
And done.
He's a one and, yeah, he is a one-and-a-half dunner. Grayson Allen, Emil Jefferson, Matt Jones, Mason Plumlee, guys that were here for Seth Curry, guys that were here for 4 years and had incredible careers. Kyle Singler, just, Kyle, I think, is fourth all-time in scoring in Duke history. Just incredible careers. And then, obviously, you have some guys who – we're here for 1 or 2 years, and Austin Rivers and Luke Kennard 2 years. And I actually left out Quinn Cook, four-year guy who, was a leader, national championship team, and had, just an incredible career. But then, just the guys who were here for 1 or 2 years and were just absolutely terrific for us. It's incredible looking back at some of these names and teams that we've had.
From your perspective, you're obviously a part of it right at the beginning as a player. Went on and did some things professionally for a few years after that and then kind of dove back in to the coaching pool. And I think a lot of people have looked and said, Duke has obviously gotten top-end talent always, and now a lot of those guys are going to the league after a year or so. When you look at the makeups of the teams and the different types of teams, and we've talked about this before, but I think it's worth repeating, to me, this decade, and and I do want to talk about the players, but I think it's worth putting in there. We've seen Coach at some of his best work from the perspective of reinventing the team every single year. You look at the different types of teams over the course of the last decade, you know, there's been 8 or 9 different types of teams.
Yeah, well, you hit on a great point. Very few teams experience what we experience on a year-to-year basis with losing the amount of guys that we do and, like you said, having to reinvent the team. And I think you see that's part of the reason, I think just in general with college basketball, I think a lot of the top teams from last year lost a lot of key guys. And that's something that happens to us every year. That's just a reality. And so what Coach does in terms of reinventing the team, but also getting the freshmen to play as quickly as possible to get them ready, because we need those guys, and then also relying on veteran experience when we do have that. And that's not something we've always generally had. And then I think the last piece to it, Shoemate, is the fact that we'll have different kinds of teams. And we've had teams with 2 really dominant big guys. We've had teams with really a perimeter-heavy team. And just making it work and figuring out what the best way is to play for that specific team.
Well, we talked about it a little bit, and you kind of talked about some of the guards, but do want to talk about some of the bigs that have been here during the course of this decade. You look at Mason Plumlee early, 2010 to 2013. He's 5th all-time in rebounding, 1,085 career rebounds. Jabari Parker, obviously, John, what he did, you know, averaging over 17 points a game in just 1 year, 54 blocks, 49 assists, 29 steals. Bagley, of course, the 21 points a game. And then Zion Williamson, I mean, you could kind of list him as both a guard and a forward, I guess, if you want to.
Right.
But, of course, he and Barrett rewriting the freshman scoring record books, 22.6 points a game. And Zion, I think he got so much attention for the dunks. I don't think people realize. 70 steals.
Right.
And 68 assists.
Incredible.
You know what I mean? And I think people think out of his dunks, his biggest highlight plays were the blocks. But, I mean, the fact that he had all those steals, to me, was incredible.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think you look back, those players you mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, 3 of the last 6 years we've had the big man of the year dating back to, you know, Mason Plumlee and Marvin Bagley and Jahlil Okafor. That's not to mention Wendell Carter. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Zion, but I think also – The there's really no position, you know, like you said, you want to put Zion as a guard or a big. Brandon Ingram, same thing. They're incredibly versatile, positionless players. And I think that's, if I had to pick a position of the decade, it's been the positionless position of the Brandon Ingram, the Jason Tatum, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, Zion Williamson, that mold of player. Even Emile, you know, in his own right was that. And so I think just the versatility and the depth at that spot is incredible to me. So I actually have a surprise for you. You know, you have no. First of all, I love that you have no idea what's going on. So last time, you know, Mr. DeGeorge joined us, and we did a Duke MBB stats segment, and we did a little trivia for me.
Yeah.
So we're going to flip it around, actually, for the holiday season. Okay. And we're going to do a little trivia for you today. And instead of a gift card for the Chop House, we have a gift card for Ruth's Chris on the line.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, anyway, here's how it works. We're going to add in, we got 5 questions for, well, I'll let you explain, Mike. First of all, welcome back to the show.
Sure.
It was such a good segment last time. We had to bring you back on.
I don't, I've lost repeat control. I don't really like this.
Guests have been in there.
You may be the first. You may be the first. So,
John Pod, it's a new ring. You like that?
I like John Pod. But yeah,
you see, I'm trying to change the subject.
I will say though, we're not just gonna make it basketball. We're gonna add in a few. Well, Mike, take it away.
5 questions. John and I came up with these 5, but it's 3 Duke questions, 1 broadcaster question, and 1 golf trivia question.
So these aren't about my personal bio, so I don't have the same advantage.
Correct.
No. So if you don't know 80% of yourself, that's an issue.
Exactly.
What's the bar I'm trying to jump over here?
Yeah, you're trying to get 4.
Got to get 4.
We think
4?
You can get 4. We think you can.
So my buddy listened to the podcast and said he thought the segment should be called Stump the Shire. So I guess this one is now going to be Stump the Shoemate.
Stump the Shoemate. So, how nervous are you right now? Are you nervous?
I think this is a disaster, and I think this is all a ploy to get Mike DeGeorge a gift card. I want to go on the record with that before we get started.
I'm just trying to get a Starbucks from beyond that. That's all I want. Do you want to start with the golf question? Do you want to start with the broadcaster question? Do you want to go with the Duke question?
You guys go whichever direction you want to.
Okay. All right.
Don't let me go 5 for 5 now, because you'll never hear the end of it.
You won't go 5 for 5.
We'll go Duke question first. Duke question. So there's been 13 retired jerseys at Duke. What is the most recent one to be retired?
By the way, I'm going to add in one thing, Mike. If on one of the questions, we'll give you one time. If you want a multiple choice, you can get a multiple choice on one question. This should not be the one, though. Talk us through here. Talk us through your thought process.
I'm thinking Sheldon Williams is the first one that pops to my mind. But, I mean, it feels like he hasn't been gone that long, but I have to say Redick.
Yep.
There you go.
Retired February 4th, 2007. Most recent one to be retired.
A little bit of a trick question. Yeah. Graduated the same class. Sheldon's jersey was retired first. So that was a tough one.
Yeah, because we had Sheldon on last year, and I was like, you know, that was the one that I was kind of grinding between.
Yeah. So nicely done.
Very good.
You're sweating already, though.
One for one. How many majors has Tiger Woods won in his career?
That would be 15.
There you go.
You see, you know that one. And then, that's a tough one right there.
Well, he just won the Masters like a year ago. It's fresh.
Nicely done.
All right. Go back to Duke. What country did Team USA beat in the 2016 Rio Olympics, which would have been Coach K's final game as the head coach of the U.S. national team?
Seriously.
A, France. B, Serbia. C, Canada. D, Spain.
I want to say it's Spain.
Okay. So what year again?
2016 Rio Olympics.
In Rio. So what are the choices? Can you give me the choices again?
France, Serbia, Canada, or Spain?
It's either France or Spain to me. Oh, was it Serbia? Okay, yeah. I'll take that as an L. I'll take the Olympic.
All right, so there's some significance to this question relating to Duke. What year, we'll go broadcast your question, what year did Jim Nance call his first Final Four on CBS?
And we can give, I'm okay with multiple choice on this one. Oh. Do you want to give multiple choice?
Is it 1990, 1991, 1992, or 1993? I said it's significant to Duke.
Well, I believe he's called all five of the Blue Devil National Championships. So that would mean he started in 91.
There you go. Thank you.
Very good. All right, so I'm 3 out of 4, right? I got Nance. I got Tiger. I whiffed on the Olympic question, but my apologies to Serbia. I didn't know that. And, of course, I got Redick. So it's better than I thought it was coming in. But you at least had a heads up that something was coming.
And I had a 50-50 shot. I'll give you
that. All of it was you. Let's not lose sight of that.
Yeah, there's look, in the evolution of Duke MBB stats trivia, you need to take it up a notch. And so it went from 50-50 to now multiple choice, different topics.
All right, Duke finished number one in the AP poll last year. Mm-hmm. Under Coach K, how many times has that happened where Duke has finished number one in the AP poll? It's in the notes every week.
Give multiple choice.
Multiple choice. A, 8, B, 10, C, 12, D, 4.
I know it's not 4.
Okay.
How many times?
How many times has Duke finished as the number one team in the AP poll in the final poll?
Man, good luck to you, mate.
Made some runs. I'm going to say 8.
8.
There we go.
It's the most in the time that Coach K's been.
So on a scale of 1 through 10, how much did you enjoy the second segment of Duke MBB Stats featuring Mike DeGeorge?
This will definitively be a series moving forward. People have no idea how hard I had to work for this gift card. We'll just leave it at that. Enjoy the holidays, Coach.
You too. Mike. Thanks, guys.
Same to you.
Thanks, Mike.